Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. It's great to say hello once again to an occasional guest on Sunday night, the Reverend Tim Costello. Tim, good to have you with us.
Good evening, John. Great to be with you.
Tim, you're about to take off on one of your almost incessant, I think, travelling expeditions, this time to Myanmar. But during the week, we've had Australia make as some political commentators have seen it, a bid for another place on the UN Security Council, as our Foreign Minister, Julie Bishop, has given a speech before the UN General Assembly. And it's been a big week as the General Assembly has talked about sustainable development, replacing the Millennial Development Goals with sustainable development goals. This is all part of your patch. How is it changing? How's the scene changing?
Well, the world is realising, as really the Pope addressed the UN and Congress to say, we live in a global village. I like to describe it as a waterbed. You press down in one place, it comes up in another, whether it's climate change or banks failing or swine flu, Ebola's, global diseases, or whether it's refugees and terror. We are all impacted, and you can't discuss dealing with terror without discussing dealing with poverty, without discussing dealing with climate change and sustainable energy. So the Sustainable Development Goals, some 17 of them, are really, if you like, a renewal of the marriage contract the world made in the year 2000 with the Millennium Development Goals. They focused on particularly developing nations and said, we will try and help you with poverty and cutting the number of hungry, and achieved huge things. We've cut in half the number of absolutely poor people. This renewal of marriage vows is where actually we've said, okay, there are a few gaps as we've learnt more about each other.
How close did we get to the Millennium Goals?
We got remarkably close, not in every country. Sadly, PNG was off on all seven of them. But overall, we actually cut by half the number of infant deaths, children under the age of five dying of preventable disease and dirty water, not having enough calories to get through the day.
So that is something the world can be proud about.
Absolutely. And I might say to the people who say, oh, yes, but that's mainly India and China. That's not right. It's not just trade. It was aid. Aid and trade need to go together. And in the poorest African countries, landlocked with often nasty neighbours and no resources to sell, thanks to aid and the Millennium Development Goals, we cut there in half the number of kids dying. So this is something really to celebrate.
So how would you describe the critical elements of the new Sustainable Development Goals?
Well, this new Sustainable Development Goals has actually added things that were missing. The first thing missing was that they only applied to developing nations. These new goals apply to every nation that signed up, 195 of them.
So we could be talking about Indigenous Australians.
So we now are going to have a lens, so we're going to have our homework marked and a scorecard on how our government policy treats the most disadvantaged in our communities, such as Indigenous communities, how we're doing on climate change. So it's, if you like, a level playing field to say we are all committing to this. You know, the second really significant thing was the gaps. Clearly, climate change was missed out in the Millennium Development Goals. And we have added a number of things, or these have added a number of things, including sustainable energy for all and sustainable water and water management, protection of oceans. Look, the other big gap is inequality. This wasn't mentioned in the Millennium Development Goals. So when people say, yep, we've just got to get more growth, and that's the mantra from our leaders as well as lots of leaders, we've just got to have more growth for greater prosperity. Well, we know we've been seeing growth in the last number of years, not as high as it once was with China off the boil. But that growth incredibly has flown to the top 1%ers. It's been inequitable. It's been unfair.
So, and this is across the board.
Yes, it's worse in some countries than others. It's certainly been much worse in the Indias and Americas and China, hugely inequitable. Even though they've lifted a lot of people out of poverty, if you have a look at the share flowing to, you know, their elite. But in Australia, we've also seen though we've done better with our social security systems than America and India and some of those nations, we've absolutely seen a growth in inequality. We're way now behind in inequality, the Scandinavian nations, for example.
When you look at this overall, are we seeing, and let's take an example of something we haven't spoken of yet, Syria. If you look at the catastrophe that Syria is, some people are saying we're looking at a deeper failure here. This isn't just a failure of dealing with the politics of the Middle East. It's a failure, a global failure. We're not managing this crisis in the way in which, for instance, we responded to the crisis at the end of World War II. That is, we've lost something of our commitment to global coherence.
There's absolutely no doubt about that. And one of the things the Sustainable Development Goals includes promoting peaceful and inclusive societies and working for peace. We have failed here. The truth is that we have not seen the great powers actually sit down and say, even though we're at loggerheads, Putin and Obama, we must impose a cessation of hostilities, because until that happens, more migrants, Syrian refugees, will be fleeing across the Mediterranean, and eventually they'll be coming our way too, of course, as some on Manus and Nauru are locked up have. The cessation of hostilities really requires you don't make peace with your friends, you make peace with your enemies. It requires the Saudi Arabians and really America, Europe, Australia, who've supplied the rebels to topple Assad, saying to Putin, Russia and Iran, who back Assad, we have to impose a cessation of hostilities here. We absolutely cannot go on just allowing our weapons to keep this war going. The war could not have gone 4.5 years, coming up to 5 years, with 250,000 dead and our 12 million people displaced without the weapons and the money flowing from the great powers. And that's where it has been a profound failure, unlike World War II.
That national self-interest is beginning to predominate over global consensus. I mean, you could even take our own example, as some have pointed to Julie Bishop's speech this week, albeit let's get on to the UN Security Council, but a reference to Australia's role way back when in helping formulate some of the principles that undergird the UN, and then in that same week have the UN rapporteur human rights declined to come to Australia because he fears he will not be able to speak properly to those people concerned with Manus Island and Nauru.
Now, this is clearly an embarrassment and a problem when we know people are risking jail, Australians, to report what they're seeing because, we've brought in this new act. We know that the rapporteur says, well, what's the point of coming? They're not allowed to talk. They'll go to prison. You can't be having that situation and in the same breath putting a hand up to be on the Human Rights Council, which is different to the Security Council we want to be on by 2017. You can't, and Julie made a very fine speech to the UN General Assembly holding up the Australian contribution to the UN Charter, a section that Doc Evatt and a Methodist evangelist, a great Australian who I understand was part of Doc Evatt's team, actually implemented about human rights, about economic care for those who are poor. You can't hold that up and say Australia's really proud of our achievements when you've slashed aid by $11.3 billion, when you have human rights abuses that a UN rapporteur says, what's the point of investigating? I can't get anywhere. These clearly are profound inconsistencies to our international image and our best foot forward.
And the reply could be, well, we're not alone here. The UN has just voted to accept Saudi Arabia on the human rights oversight body.
That's appalling, and you start to say, no wonder we're in the situation we're in. We mouth human rights, and then we actually do not stand up for them. So really on Syria, the awful thing that's been happening is effectively with building fences in Europe, particularly Hungary, and even turn back boat policies here. We're saying we're going to divide the world into the disordered, chaotic part of the world, and we're going to be safe within the ordered part of this world. Well, that sort of thinking led to, if you like, a human rights outbreak in World War II, and the UN Convention after that, when 6 million Jews saying never, the UN Convention being written to say never again. So we can't fail to learn the lessons of history and mouth platitudes that were committed to human rights and then have behaviour like this.
On the optimistic side, do you think, as many are beginning to articulate, that we might be at a hinge point again, that for 30 years or so we've been following the path of national and personal self-interest, but that we're actually beginning to see manifest in a political side, or sometimes eccentrically, you get Jeremy Corbyn elected in the British Labour Party, you get Bernie Sanders making a pitch for the Democrats in the United States, you get the Pope with his coherent speech welcomed, people just saying this is the sort of thing we're wanting to hear, that maybe the ship's turning?
Absolutely. Look, with the loss of Nelson Mandela, there's very few clear moral voices, and the Pope has been filling that vacuum, and most of us around the world have just been cheering. The two political examples of Bernie and Jeremy that you referred to actually says people instinctively know they can't go on just the way we're told it's going on. You know, I say for the last 10 years, Australians have been buying lots more goods that they don't really need with money they don't really have on credit to impress people they don't really like. And we call this growth. We know that whilst we all want strong, prosperous, flourishing economies, at the end of the day, an economy only exists for the sanity, protection of children, for purposeful living, for sustainable living. And that's why what the Pope has been saying is manifesting itself with leaders getting elected who seem to be swimming against the stream.
Tim Costello, great to talk with you. You're off to Myanmar this week.
I am, yes. World Vision works up there. I had the extraordinary story of Aung San Suu Kyi now in Parliament, but still a bit of a difficult crackdown occurring. World Vision's work is just keeping hope alive there. We don't want to return to the bad old days. So, keep Myanmar in your prayers.
Tim Costello, World Vision Australia, thanks so much for joining us on Sunday Night.
That's a pleasure.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.